Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, a place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It's Season 7, Episode 62, and it is playoff time as we get ready for the Miami Dolphins. And we had a little trouble lining up the beat writer we wanted to get for today, so we'll look to do that on Friday. But we got plenty to talk about, Dave, as we get ready for the matchup Sunday, 1 o'clock, Heinz Field. And again, since we had the Immaculate Podcast, the Lost, the Goat Podcast, we did episode 2 yesterday.
And look, you're trying to do episode 62 again. It's episode 63.
You're wanting 63.
You're wanting to do three versions of the Immaculate Podcast.
Yeah, the Immaculate Podcast. Well, it deserves the attention that it so richly deserves. But we don't have anything new on the injury front since the Mike Tomlin presser. Obviously, we'll get that this afternoon, and that will be our guide, much as it is Mike Tomlin's guide as to what's going on. But a situation, Dave, where a bunch of interesting topics kind of that we haven't gone through yet this week. And I think maybe the most curious one is this story that graced the cover of Sports Illustrated. And it came out late yesterday afternoon about Ben Roethlisberger from SL Price. And I know Matthew wrote about it on your site. I have glanced at the story. I actually tried to get Scott Price on my show today or tomorrow, and he declined.
Yeah, good luck. Good luck with that.
Which was interesting. But to me, it just is a screaming hot take that didn't have any foundation in proof. It's trying to prove a negative, right? It's.
Yeah, you know, I think Matthew probably summed it up best in the post on Steelers Depot, where you know it says, which seems to lament that Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback Ben Roethlisberger has not overtly done anything wrong off the field since he was accused of raping. In so many words, he tries to get on him for basically saying he hasn't really redeemed himself yet, and you know how he had the falling out with his hometown, and you know the article really has no teeth whatsoever in it, you know. And this is the same, you know, let's keep in mind SL Price is from Miami, born in Miami, wrote for the Miami Herald just a little over a year ago. Wrote a redemption piece about Ray Lewis, who, where did Ray Lewis go to college, David?
The U.
This looks like that, you know, and it's a cover story at on top of it, and it looks like this thing was held on to purpose, you know, on purpose for all this time, because I think he quotes Marquise Pouncey and I forget who else in the article as well too, going, you know, way back before the start of the season. So he's been sitting on this for a while, and it really has no teeth whatsoever.
I just found it curious to to be bringing up something where, you know, everybody knows the backstory, but I'll tell you the front story is my experience of being relatively close to the whole situation is Ben has been an absolutely, you know, upstanding citizen. He's got a family now. He hasn't had any issues. He's involved in charitable work. I think everybody knows about his K-9 foundation with support and rescue dogs. I don't think he draws a lot of attention to himself in the charitable work he does to make it about him. It just seems wildly off base and ill-timed. Well, I guess it'll never be properly timed if I feel like it's wildly off base. So I didn't understand it. I was shocked to see it. I mean, you've got so many good storylines coming into the NFL playoffs, and you come up with a line calling him the most polarizing NFL player, which He will be polarizing, no doubt, and that won't change. But to suggest that Ben Roethlisberger hasn't changed, or to suggest there's no proof of change because he hadn't done anything wrong, is just trying to prove a negative, and basically I think it's nonsense.
Yeah, and now this was the quote I was looking for from Matthew Marksi. So it seems until Roethlisberger does something wrong again, we can never know if he is truly reformed. In his word, in other words, he will never actually be reformed in the eyes of a not insignificant number of people. I thought that was the best
right.
way.
And here's the larger point here, and whether somebody's talking about Joe Mixon, and there was the whole Brent Musburger stir on the Sugar Bowl Sunday night with Joe Mixon, with Musburger wishing him a prosperous NFL career, is some people just never forgive people, and they will never forgive people oftentimes based on the more successful and famous they are, the less they're willing to forgive. And, you know, a lot of people in, you know, our Judeo-Christian society consider themselves Christians. And it's very ironic that, you know, some of those people are the least forgiving people out there, that they don't believe in redemption or reform. I mean, this is an act that, you know, we're talking about events that happened, what, 7 or 8 years ago. again, there are allegations. Me talking about it's not going to change anybody's mind one way or the other, their view of what the events that happened. So it's not worth getting into that. But it is funny that I do think in our society, the more famous and successful you are, the less likely you are to be forgiven by many people, because, you know, certainly a level of jealousy. And what you don't want to tear down, you know, people who are in those positions. So it's unfortunate. I don't think the article has a lot of teeth. I was a little surprised they got declined twice, to interview the author today or tomorrow, as I went through some channels that I thought would kind of guarantee that I got the interview, but not to be the case.
Is he doing any interviews? That's the question. And has he done interviews in the past? I mean, if you're going to write something like that, you sure better be out there defending it, you know, in other public forums and mediums, you know. I mean, make no mistake, David, you and I both grew up with Sports Illustrated, right?
I mean, absolutely. I mean, it was, you know, run to the mailbox on Thursdays when SA came, not just for the swimsuit issue.
Right, yeah, but we were running even faster for the swimsuit issue. But yeah, I mean, I can remember, man, I mean, what, 7, 8 years old, I can remember reading, reading Sports Illustrated and those kind of things. Well,
especially, I got a hundred of them. So every Steeler, Pirate, Penguin, SI on the cover, SI covers, you know, saved in my mother's, you know, house in the basement. I mean, yeah, it was, you know, the internet didn't exist, and you had the daily paper. You had a little bit of television stuff, you know, Sports Center, ESPN didn't start till 1979. So Sports Illustrated was a way to learn a lot of stuff. Sporting News and Sports Illustrated.
Right. And remember that CNN Sports Tonight, I mean, that was the big thing, right?
Right.
Nick Charles, Fred Hickman, all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, Dr. Z had that column, what, in Sports Illustrated. Now, obviously, I didn't get into columns until you got a little bit older. Besides, I'm not even sure I was able to read by 7 years old, six or seven. But no, in all seriousness, though, I remember growing up with Sports Illustrated in the house. And I mean, now it's just, what has it become if they're letting this kind of stuff, you know, be the cover story?
Well, you know, like I said, I don't know that from an editorial perspective that I don't think I would have done it. Is it an effort to, you know, does that sell more magazines? I don't know. I mean, does that sell more magazines than talking about the Week 17 games? There's so many. So, you know, SI is a different article. SI is a different animal than it used to be. You know, you never get rarely get a game story now because it's always dated. Understandably, the medium, the world has changed. The medium has changed in terms of what they're delivering. So they're trying to take deep dives and, you know, take looks behind the curtain and do things like that, which they've always done. But it's harder to find the elite writers. I mean, it used to be all the best writers wrote for Sports Illustrated.
Yeah.
That was the place to go. But
Frank DeFord and
Yeah, I just go down the list of, you know, the, I mean, just, you know, all of them. So that's not, it's not that way anymore. And so bad timing on the, well, I don't know, maybe for them, good timing in the article. I just think a rough take on Ben. And I'm sure today's the day he speaks to the media. I'm sure he will get asked about it. And I'm sure that I would imagine his answer will be, I have not read it.
Yeah, then
no further comment, right? If I haven't read it, I can't comment on it.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't be shocked if he went that direction either. People are probably going to ask, why are we sitting here writing about it and talking about an article like that, David?
Well, it's topical. I mean, look, we're not – just because we don't agree with something doesn't mean we're going to put our heads in the sand about it. I mean, this is a nationally recognized magazine. It has generated conversation across Twitter, and I, you know, look, I'm not out canvassing team, you know, fan bases that aren't Steeler fans. I don't think they give a damn. But if you're a Steeler fan and that's the team you root for, and they're writing about your quarterback, it sure as heck is a topical conversation.
And that's exactly the same. You know, I would say the same thing. And you know, that's why I had Matthew Marksey tackle it. You know, I sent that to him right away and say, you know, nobody can probably attack this better than you can. And he got right on it yesterday. And yeah, I mean, sure. People call what Price did clickbait, but I just think it's just someone way off, you know, trying to make a article, criticizing Roethlisberger and hit right at the right time, you know, with the playoffs coming up, trying to maximize on Travis. So is that kind of clickbaiting? Oh, okay. Is us writing about it on Steelers Depot clickbaiting? Well, more than, you know, we want to discuss the topic and something as you, if we don't write about it and recap it, somebody else is. You know, so we would like to be in the forefront of having discussion about it. But, yeah, I mean, there was just no teeth to it. So I guess we should kind of end with that. And it would be interesting to find out if Price ends up granting interviews to anybody, because I kind of researched him on Twitter or on the Google machine last night. And I don't think I found many, if any, interviews with him.
Yeah, well, I will tell you, he did respond. This was very shortly after the article went out, so I'm guessing he didn't have a slate of interviews. Didn't mean he didn't have. He said, I can't do it. Tomorrow's impossible. Can't do it. So obviously, I followed up with, you know, how about Thursday? And he said, no, apologize, can't do Thursday. So and at that point, Friday, we're out of the news cycle, and so it is what it is. I'm guessing the answer is going to be no. If I hear him on other airwaves, I'll be disappointed, but you know, so be it. He won't be on my show. Hey, also, let's not forget, Dave, the mortgage process can sometimes be more challenging than spelling Roethlisberger, but it wasn't very hard for SL Price to spell Roethlisberger. Let our buddy Craig Oxane guide you through the sometimes daunting process to help you score the home of your dreams, even in Miami. If you're considering buying or refinancing a home now or in the future, please give Craig Oxane a call. He's an experienced, nationally recognized lender that can help you achieve the dream of home ownership. Call Craig today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. Email Craig at craig@blackandgoldlending.com or apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. First Advantage Mortgage Company, NMLS 2551 and NMLS 320399. Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. All right, so, Dave, we you know, we spent some time, a fair bit of time for those who've had a chance. You know, it's only been less than 24 hours since the version 2 of the greatest podcast, the Immaculate Podcast, went up. So I don't know that people got a chance to digest all our conversations about Landry Jones and D'Angelo Williams. But you were a guest on my show yesterday, and we talked about, you know, there's another guy that we haven't talked about at all lately. It was a big topic of our conversation at the beginning of the season, was Lawrence Timmons. And whether he'll be back next year. And, you know, I think people know that my thought was they weren't going to extend him. That proved to be correct. They didn't. And I figured they would probably, since they extended Vince Williams, they'd probably move away from Lawrence Timmons. And I was more confident about that, you know, 8 weeks into the season than at any point in time. But Lawrence Timmons has been very good, played some of his best football over the last 8 or 9 weeks. obviously an integral part of this defense. He's been on the field basically every snap. You know, the Steelers are playing seven guys every, you know, basically the Steelers are playing their linebackers and their defensive backs every snap. So, you know, however many guys that is at different times, but that's, you know, seven or eight guys almost every game are playing every snap. So the question is now, Dave, I'm revisiting my position, and your position has always been that you kind of expect Timmons back. What do you think the status is for Lawrence Timmons?
I think he's back. I think Timmons has come out in a few interviews and said that, you know, he's only, what, 30 years old. He's not playing like a guy that's 30 years old right now. But even with that said, how, you know, is Timmons really playing 30% better than he was in 2015? I don't think so. I mean, I think he is playing a little bit better.
I thought he played well in 2015. I thought he wasn't great down the stretch. But I thought he was great in 2014. I thought he was good in 2015, and I thought the end of 2015, the beginning of 2016 was not his best football.
No, I think you can argue it the other way, that the middle to beginning of 2015 probably wasn't his best, because wasn't he dealing with the turf toe injury from the start to kind of the middle of the 2015 season? That's kind of when all the criticism, I think, kind of surfaced mostly about his play.
For the first time, they took him off the field toward the end of last year, and maybe so you didn't see him getting, you know, having to run with receivers. The other thing is, let's be honest about this. The Steelers have changed their defensive scheme, and in changing their defensive scheme, it helped Lawrence Timmons a ton. They let him attack the line of scrimmage most of the time. They've been blitzing more frequently, which gives quarterbacks less time, which asks him to do less in coverage when he's in coverage. So, you know, schematically, the Steelers have helped him.
And he's always been the last 3 or 4 years, a better downhill player anyway. I mean,
always, yeah,
you know,
for sure.
The older you get, that's going to be the case. But he hasn't been awful in coverage. I mean,
I agree.
Like I said, nobody seems to still want to talk about Ryan Shazier a couple of games ago running down the middle of the field against the Ravens, right? A couple of times and getting beat. Okay, nobody wants to talk about that, but they'll sure tell you, even if Timmons is running down the middle of the field and gets beaten, even though the pass is incomplete, they never forget that Timmons didn't, you know, was a step behind. So, you know, you can't have it both ways. You know, regardless, I, you know, Timmons still has some football left in him. Because he's older, because he's probably best fitted for what the Steelers do, it's going to limit his market value. But I still think he's worthy of one of those, you know, 3 year, $10 million contracts. And if you can, you know, maybe a little bit more than that, and if you can get him through the first 2 years of it, you're in great shape, because there won't be probably much dead money associated with a third year. He'd be foolish to come back on a 1 year deal for the minimum. I think he could easily get that somewhere else. Now, obviously he's not going to want to end his career in another uniform. So, you know, maybe the Steelers will have that kind of bargaining chip, but they're not going to get him back at a minimum salary, or in my opinion, even $1 million or $1.5 million. I just don't see that happening. But regardless of what the money is, I think he'll be back in a Steelers uniform in 2017. And people were asking, well, you know, what are you going to do? Are you going to draft an inside linebacker? If you re-sign Timmons, there's really no reason for you to draft an inside linebacker, because you obviously will have Shazier a few more years. You just signed Vince Williams to a 3 year deal. You drafted Tyler Matakevich on top of it. If you did draft an inside linebacker, it's going to be a situation where you take one in the sixth or seventh round.
I would generally agree with that. You know, are you going to upgrade from Matakevich, you know, whatever, if they see a guy in round four? Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they drafted one, but it's a little bit the Landry Jones conversation. If you sign Landry Jones, you're less likely to be drafting a quarterback in those middle rounds. I think it'll be very interesting with Vince, how much he wants to play for, how short term a deal, you know, would they go year to year with him?
You mean would you said Vince. You mean Timmons?
Timmons, yeah. Would they go year to year with him? Would they, you know, do one of those Polamalu, Heath Miller type contracts? A bunch of different options, but I think it's clear that Vince Williams can obviously still play in the league and probably for a couple more years. So it'll be, you know, in talking about Landry and D'Angelo and some guys who are in this situation, it would be remiss if we didn't mention Lawrence Timmons. Okay, so Dave, as I said, nothing new on the injury front. Omar Kelly is a beat writer for the Dolphins who I threw out there that he denied he was trolling, but I threw out there that he was trolling. He said he was doing film study and talking about the matchups that he sees for the Dolphins. And for those who use Twitter, if you go to at Omar Kelly yesterday, or if you look on my timeline, you'll see some of the conversation. But Dave, he was pointing out that he doesn't know why Steeler fans think Le'Veon Bell is such a god. That's a quote from him, because Jay Ajayi ran for more yards in less attempts. Fact, in all capital letters. And in fact, Omar is correct. Jay Ajayi ran for four more yards than Le'Veon Bell in one less attempt in the 2016 regular season. What did you think of Omar Kelly's tweets yesterday?
Well, for one thing, Omar, I follow Omar on Twitter just because the occasional news item that he might post. But outside of that, Omar's not a great follow on Twitter. You know, he talks about film study. I'm not seeing where he's studying, if you know what I'm saying. He is very controversial. He likes to troll his own followers at times, and you know, I don't hate him for that. I do that with mine as well sometimes, but I don't view him as an analyst per se. Right. I view him more as a news provider when it comes to the Dolphins. He's going to get a lot of some of the things that he threw out there. He's going to get a lot of feedback on, especially from Steeler fans, right?
Yeah. Look, you know, he went in to talk about some other stuff about the game, and Dave, I think one of the things we should emphasize again, and this is one of the points of emphasis of our conversation yesterday on my show was. I mean, we talk about how the teams are different than what they were when they met in week six. I mean, I think very simply, to make it as succinct as possible, in that game, as you pointed out, the Steelers offensively played without Marcus Gilbert injured and Ladarius Green on the PUP list. Defensively, they played without Ryan Shazier injured, Bud Dupree on injured reserve designate return, and Sean Davis was basically benched in transition from making the move from kind of nickel corner back to safety before getting a starting job. That is significant in terms of, you know, guys who are going to be available this week who did not play in that game. Now, does that mean the Steelers get a guaranteed win? No. But you throw on top of that, the Dolphins are going to be without their starting quarterback, Ryan Tannehill. They're starting, you know, potentially Pro Bowl center, Mike Pouncey. They're going to be without Rashad Jones. They're certainly Pro Bowl safety. And they're going to be out without their other safety as well, whose name's escaping me right now. That's nine guys that, and you know, maybe we could add a couple one way or the other to the Dolphins' advantage. But that's nine guys, the Dolphins missing four and the Steelers getting five back, that played in that game or didn't play in that game and will or won't play in this game.
Yeah, I don't think lightning's going to strike again, as Mike Tomlin put it during his Tuesday podcast. Davey, you just talking about Jay Ajayi and the thing that Omar threw out there as far as the rushing yards and the carries and all like that. And this is not a negative when you talk about a running back such as IJ, and it doesn't discount what Omar put out there. But how many runs of 20 yards or more do you think Jay Ajayi had?
How many do I think he had? 10.
He did. He had 10. Good guess, unless you already knew.
No, I was guessing.
Knew the answer to that one. I believe that's correct. I believe that's correct, unless I have a filter wrong here. But anyway, 10, and guess what his average gain was on those 10 runs of 20 yards or more?
I'm guessing his average gain was, 35 yards.
Close, 36.2 yards. So, 362 of his yards, and how many did he have on the season? 1,272 yards he had. So get your math ready. 1,272 yards he had, and what did I say? 10 of those runs.
360 yards of it.
All right, so. What percentage of that?
That's more than 25. So it's about almost 30%. Well, so, let's see, 360 out of 1,200.
Yeah, 360 out of 362 divided by.
Well, it's
1,272. 362.
1,272. So it's about 25%. A little bit more than that, right? So it's not 30%.
Let's see. Let me see if I can get this correct here.
Yeah. Well, you got to
get it back. Yeah. What do you think? I got my
27%.
I can't even do that with my shoes off. 28.5. How's that?
All right. That sounds correct.
All right. Yeah. So 28.5% of his yardage came on 10 runs.
Now, here's the obvious question. Is that good, bad, or indifferent?
Well, I think you need to go back into looking at, it's easy to look at yards per carry, right, and say whether it was good or not. But is a 7-yard run on 3rd and 8 worth a damn?
No. But I don't know that answers anything about Jay Ajayi.
Right. Well, what I'm getting at is I wonder what the percentage of successful runs that he had was.
Yeah, no, and that's good. And we can get into Football Outsiders about that and get into that. And I wanted to, when we move on from this, I want to talk about some of the things about the Steelers on that front because I'm going to be writing about that this afternoon. But, yeah, it's certainly interesting to see. And I think the point that I made about Omar is – nobody's saying Jay Ajayi is not a good back. I mean, the guy's had a great year. I think everybody would agree, no matter who you root for, he has been one of the big pleasant surprises of the NFL. The Pro Bowl rosters are tough to make in the AFC with Le'Veon Bell, with the year DeMarco Murray had, with the year LeSean McCoy had. But Jay Ajayi, I assume, my bet would be, and let's hope Le'Veon Bell doesn't go to the Pro Bowl because he's got other commitments, as in a Super Bowl, and Ajayi would be the first guy, to replace him, or, one of two maybe who would replace him. He's had a great year. But I don't know why the point is to diminish Le'Veon Bell or, try to take away from what he's done. There's no doubt Le'Veon Bell, anybody around the NFL will tell you Le'Veon Bell's a better back. I mean, pass receiving, pass protection. Everything else that he does as a member of the Steelers doesn't mean maybe Ajayi, maybe he gets there someday. Who knows? But the whole, it was just funny to watch the tweets that followed as he said, Kiko Alonso is one of the best at covering running backs out of the backfield. Should be no problem. The Dolphins give up 140 yards a game rushing. That is not the way to beat them. The Steelers aren't going to beat them with Le'Veon Bell running the ball. It was a bit of a humorous set of tweets. And he quickly responded saying he wasn't trolling.
All right, here's one other thing to consider with him. Over 600, nearly half of his, probably right at half of his 1,270-something yards came in 3 games. Once again, one of those was against the Steelers, 204 yards, and the other two 200-plus games came against the Buffalo Bills. Once again, that's not a negative on him, but what did he do in those other games?
I think that is more of a negative, that if you're not doing it week in and week out, I mean, if you have, if you know, look, And to take this further to the extreme, are you a better contributor to your baseball team if 2 days a week you get four hits, or if every day of the week you go out and get a hit? Your batting average might end up being exactly the same, but if you're contributing on a daily, and I don't know that there's a clear answer in baseball, or you can make these things more extreme, but I do think for the running back position, you would like a guy you know is going to give you a consistent level of production week in and week out. So I would take that guy over the guy who hits a home run, you know, once every four games.
And you know, one of the knocks that we've talked about all season on Le'Veon Bell is what?
One of the knocks on Le'Veon Bell, he hasn't had a lot of long runs, and that's, you know, that's a testament to the fact that he hasn't had a lot of bad days if he's averaging the yards that he's averaging.
Absolutely. And when you throw in his receiving and all that stuff, you know, give me a guy that get me 5 yards a carry almost, you know, every other carry, and I'm going to win a lot of football games, right? Because, and it goes back to that successful run thing again. It's just, you know, a 30-yard run is nice every game, but if your other runs are only getting me 2 yards, I probably only scored on one of those drives, right? You know, so that would be fun to look at. It wouldn't take me long to come up with percentage of successful runs for Ajayi and Le'Veon Bell, and it'd be interesting. I would think that Le'Veon Bell would come out way ahead on successful run percentage where that's concerned.
Okay, so let me take you down some Steelers season, regular season stats. And when you think about this team, one of the things I when we look back and do our season, look, this is a new set of circumstances now. The Steelers are in the playoffs. The 2016 season, it's in the books. Done deal. And so if we're assessing that, Dave, I think the way I would describe the Steelers season, and I think this bears out in the statistics, if you get a little bit more, if you kind of grind through some of the stats and look at the numbers, is what this Steelers team has been, this 11-5 Steelers team, is a Steelers team that has done everything pretty well, and it has done nothing spectacularly, and it has done nothing terribly. It has been pretty good offensively. It's been pretty good defensively. They've scored points. They haven't given up a ton of points. They've been able to run the ball. They've been able to throw the ball. They ended up kind of getting their sack totals back up. We can get into some, you know, more nuanced stats of football and outsiders that they get into. But would you say that's a fair assessment of this team? They do everything pretty well.
The main thing I would probably disagree with all you rattled off right there is this defense was pretty terrible in the first part of the season.
Well, right. I think if you look at a couple games specifically, I mean, most notably the Eagles game. You look at that, but their numbers, the game I point to is when they changed their style was the Ravens game. But I think the trend line was much more up than the offense, which I think was flat all season, you know, with good games and bad games. Well, here's one of the interesting things. Football Outsiders has a stat that they call variance. And on the season, the New York Giants, in the 30 years they've had this stat, the New York Giants finished with a 2.3% variance, which is the lowest of any team in history. Over 30 years, 16 teams, they were the most consistent teams. They were consistently what they were every week. They gave the same type level of performance. The Steelers were by far the highest variance team in the NFL this season in terms of, and I think you can just go to weeks 4 and 5. Where they get smoked by the Eagles and they come back and absolutely smoke the Kansas City Chiefs, who were two of the top seven teams in the league, according to their rankings, at the end of the year. And that just shows, and the Steelers, they were that. I think it's fair to say that their level of play, while they won a lot of games down the stretch, you never quite knew whether it was going to be the offense or the defense that did it. There wasn't a consistent level from either side of the ball week in and week out.
true or false, the Steelers' offense played great defense against the Chiefs?
Well, I guess you mean meaning they had the ball the whole game?
Well, just scoring, you know, kind of scoring quickly and
yeah.
And you know, when they did get the early turnover or whatnot, they capitalized. Sometimes
the two early turnovers, the fumble and the interception.
Right.
That put, you know, look, the Chiefs are exactly the type of team that you want to put behind the eight ball early because they lack, at least then without Tyreek Hill, they lacked the dynamic weapons on offense to really, you know, they got to grind it down the field typically. So if you get a big lead on them, you can bury them.
I think when you look at this season as a whole, I think it's okay to look at the offense throughout the entire season. You know, now obviously people are going to point to, you can always stick an asterisk next to it with you know, Ben getting missing the game against New England. And then we have tons of stats to back up that Ben is usually not great the first two or three games back from injury, right? I mean,
I'm throwing that on the Steeler coaching staff because Ben was great in the fourth quarter when they asked, you know, when he had to, you know, come from behind. That was just game plan disaster.
You mean against the Ravens?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll say what you will. The stats still say that he's not great to you.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean that. Hopefully we can stop being forced to write and talk about that, meaning that Roethlisberger stays healthy for all 16 games. But until then, it's something that's going to come up every time. But you know, I think as a whole, it's still even fair to write and talk about the Steelers' offense from week one, you know, as a whole, you know, game one to game 16. Now, the defense, I really think it's a whole different story. And I think any stats or any talk or anything written about that defense needs to be broken down into this is what happened during the first half of the season and this is what happened during the second half of the season, because we saw a lot of change, you know, in not only personnel but the way scheme and the way this defense played overall in the second half of the season. So believe it or not, this defense ended up with a 5.9 adjusted net yards per passing attempt stat, which you would have won a lot of my money had you bet me my money, around week six or week seven, that they would have lowered that number, you know, that far throughout the season. So, you know, props to the Steelers coaching staff for getting those young players in there, getting them learning the system, the transition that Sean Davis, you know, had to make. You got to take your hat off and hand it to him. I think it's important to remember that Ryan Shazier missed some time during the first part of that, you know, first quarter into kind of the second quarter of the season as well, too, with that knee injury as well. Artie Burns really didn't starting until the game against Baltimore. There's a lot. Bud Dupree didn't come back until, you know, later on in the season. James Harrison didn't take over for Jarvis Jones until, you know, after that Dallas game there as well. So I think when you look back on this season, you really on the defense, you really have to divide this thing into two halves where you don't have to do that so much with the offense. And you're right, the offense has been inconsistent, gouge your eyes out, inconsistent at times. We talked about the drive killing penalties, right? Throughout the season with this offense as well, too.
Yeah, so, you know, it's the whole thing. People, I will say, people complain about the Steelers. I think the final rankings in Football Outsiders, the way they do things, whether you like their methods or not, I think they are tried and true, and they've been around for a long enough time that they have a decent amount of credibility. I think the offense finished ninth. The defense finished 11th. Special teams finished 16th. And they're one of the few teams, in fact, one of only three that had all three, we talked about this earlier, had all three units in the top half of the NFL. And the Patriots are one of them, and they made it just barely as their defense finished 16th. But their defense was much better down the stretch. And I'm trying to remember who the third one was. It might have been, well, I'll tell you in a second. But, you know, it's these types of things. The season, you know, the season's obviously going to be a success or not. Assuming that obviously if they lose to Miami, it's not a successful season. If they beat Miami, then the season will come down to being viewed successfully, I think, on the Kansas City game. Dave, is that fair? I think some people, if they beat Kansas City, I think almost everybody, if you get to the AFC Championship game, views the season as successful. There will be plenty who, if the Steelers lose to the Chiefs, will view it as unsuccessful. But that will be the dividing line as to a successful season, right?
Well, you certainly can't lose to the Dolphins and it be successful. I mean, this is a team that you were supposed to beat back in Week 6 and you didn't, and you're supposed to beat this time around for sure. And if you don't, there's going to be you better get the mute button handy on Twitter, because if they lose to the Dolphins, our timelines are going to be full of the fire everybody type tweets here.
Let me just give you a ranking. So the three teams that had all three units in the top half of the rankings were: New England was offense was 2, defense 16, special teams 7. Pittsburgh was offense 8, defense 11, special teams 16. Kansas City was offense 13, defense 14, special teams 2. There were the only three teams that had kind of that kind of balanced. And I think that's really what the Steelers were, even though the performance was up and down week to week. They were a balanced team. They were a balanced team offensively. Look, one of the things that will always be a significant positive is the Steelers. They only fumbled the ball away 3 times all season, the lowest in the NFL. And when you're not turning the ball over, you know, they threw 15 interceptions, probably, you know, a tad higher than you'd like. But when you're not turning the ball over, that's awfully good. And then their O-line finished second overall in the rankings. They were number 2 in run blocking by their metrics, only behind the Saints. The Cowboys, with adjusted blocking, actually finished 5th, and they were number 4 in pass blocking in terms of, you know, sacks per drop back in terms of their metrics. So O-line got big props as well.
When you look at net differential as far as turnovers, too, and you talk about a team like the Kansas City Chiefs, they took away 33 footballs this year and only gave it away, 17 times. Now, the Steelers only gave the football away 18 times, which is not bad, but they had 10 less turnovers, you know, takeaways than the Chiefs had. You talk about the season will be measured – assuming the Steelers can make it to the divisional round game against the Chiefs, there are going to be a lot of upset folks still, David, if they lose to the Chiefs.
Oh, they're going to be plenty of upset. You're allowed to be upset. I mean, I expect everybody to be upset if they lose to the Chiefs.
Well, I think people view this as be quite honest with you. I know it's on the road. I know it's going to be a tougher game or should be a tougher game than the game against Miami. That's a game that I'm going to be very, very, very upset if they lose, because
what do you think the point spread will be?
Kansas City 2.5.
Yeah, I think it'll be right around pick. Some of it may depend on how the Steelers look this week. If the Steelers blow the Dolphins out of the water, maybe it's closer to pick. If not, you know, maybe it's a little bit the Chiefs' way. But I
think opening line will be around 2, and I think by the time it kicks off, I think it could be a closer to a pick 'em game.
Look, when you're a 10-point favorite in the NFL, those are upsets. You know, games that we think as in oftentimes when you're rooting for a team, you think if a team is a 3 or 4 point favorite and they lose, they got upset and it's a disaster. Well, the reason the line's 3 or 4 is it's not that easy to win in the NFL. The Steelers were only – and there were obviously – let's take into account, maybe it's a bad example. The Steelers were only roughly a touchdown favorite over they were only a 3-point favorite over the Browns. 3 or 4 point favorite with the roster they were using. But if they had been using all their starters, they weren't likely to be more than a 10-point favorite. They're a 10-point favorite against the Dolphins this week. If they lose this game, it's a bad loss. It doesn't matter. If, you know, it's the playoffs. Sure, I get it. But it is a bad loss, and it will be they will be eviscerated.
Yeah, and we don't want to get too far ahead looking at Kansas City, but I know that offense of Kansas City. I've studied Alex Smith and the rest of them, quite a bit. The defense obviously will be a little bit different defense than the Steelers faced the first time around because they didn't have Justin Houston and all like that. But overall, that Kansas City look, just don't let Tyreek Hill kill you and don't punt or kick the football to him on special teams and just don't let him explosive play you and you should be fine. I think against the Chiefs overall, I really think the big measuring stick and people saying don't give New England a free pass to the AFC Championship game just yet. Sure, anything can happen. It'll be interesting to see the Patriots have to play possibly the Texans defense. But even so, I want to see a Pittsburgh New England AFC Championship game. Do you?
Me too. Absolutely.
Mean, that's what I want to see. I mean, sure, the fan side of you says, oh boy, sure, it'd be nice to see the Steelers play the Raiders or the Texans in the AFC Championship game. Not me, brother. I want to see him beat Tom Brady because I think they can pass on that defense with Ben Roethlisberger. I just want to see if that defense is for real or not on the Steelers side of football can stop a guy like Tom Brady and the rest of that offense here. So that's kind of what that's what I'm rooting for here. And I think that will be I think if they were to lose to New England in an AFC Championship game, then and only then can you say, well, I mean, it's a successful season if they get past Miami, I think. But I still think a lot of people will judge that Kansas City game, a loss as a bad one. But to me, it comes down to New England.
I know you love the talk stat, and here's another way to look at it just for the leaders looking at the season-long numbers. You got the turnover differential is one aspect of it. There's a passing big play differential, and the way it's defined, the one I'm looking at, is 25-plus yards is defined as a big play. And then you got a rushing big play differential where 10-plus yards is determined a big play. The leaders in the NFL this year, the Cowboys are at 40. They've got a plus-5 turnover differential and a plus-35 big play differential. So they're at 40. They're number one. The Patriots are number two at 38, plus-12 on the turnover, plus-26 at big play. The Falcons are number three at 29, plus-11 on the turnover, plus-18 on the big play differential. A little surprisingly, the Titans are fourth. They're zero in turnover differential, but plus-26 on the big play differential. And the Steelers are fifth, with 5 on the turnover differential and 18 on the big play differential for a 23. And just to give you a sense, the Packers are 6th at 20 and nobody else is 15. So you think about who the 5 best teams are, and I said this a month ago, the 5 teams that I think are most likely to be in the Super Bowl, I had the Steelers and the Patriots on the AFC side, I had the Cowboys, the Packers, and the Falcons on the NFC side, Well, here we are. Those are 5 of the 6 teams in that talk stat that you like so much.
Well, here's the thing, too, and you can keep moving.
By the way, the Chiefs are -9 in big play differential.
And is that surprising?
No.
Because Alex Smith and it's something that I keep going over all the time with the Chiefs is talking about him and not being able to get the ball down the field. I just pulled up my 2016 NFL season predictions. I had I had the Cowboys going 5-11 this year and being the bottom of the NFC East. I had the Redskins going 10-6. I had the Packers going 11-5, winning the North. I had the Panthers going 10-6, winning the South. The Falcons I had going 8-8. The Seahawks I had coming out of the West with a 13-3 record. I had the Patriots coming out of theirs with 11-5. I did have the Bills in second place with 8-8. I had the Steelers 11-5.
There you go.
David, had the Ravens 9-7 and the Bengals 8-8. I wasn't too far off there, and I had the Browns 2-14. I know me some AFC North.
Yeah, right.
I had the Colts coming out of the South with a 12-4 record. I had the Chiefs coming out of the West 10-6 and Oakland 9-7. Here are my, I had the Panthers and the Giants and the Cardinals and the Redskins in the wild card round, and I had the Seahawks and the Packers as the as I guess you would say the bye. My NFC Championship game scenario is still alive. I have Seahawks over Packers. In the AFC side, I had the Steelers over the Ravens in the wild card round. The Raiders over the Chiefs. In the AFC wild card round, I had the Steelers and Patriots both getting, or I had the Colts and the Patriots both getting byes. My AFC championship, I had Steelers over Patriots. So all four of my, AFC championship teams are still alive, and my Super Bowl 51 prediction at the start of the season was Steelers over Seahawks. Now, of course, I would have thrown all those predictions out the window, most of them at the halfway point of the season. But that was my predictions marked September 8, 2016.
Not bad. I think I had Steelers over Packers as my Super Bowl, which obviously is still alive. I got a stat for you that you asked earlier, which – again, I don't have the exact definition of how these guys looked at it, but you talked about stuffed runs or successful runs for Jay Ajayi. Looking at Bell and Ajayi, just to take this a little further, yards per game, Bell 105.7, Ajayi 84.8. Yards of 10-plus carries of 10-plus yards, Ajayi 39, Bell 37. First downs, Bell 69, Ajayi 60. And stuffed percentage, Le'Veon Bell 5%, Jay Ajayi 14.2%.
That stuff percentage is bigger than people think.
Yeah, it's a huge deal. I mean, those are, you know, ball change, you know, possession changing carries oftentimes.
Do they view stuffs as is their definition of stuff? Is that are they viewing that as an unsuccessful play stuff, or are they viewing that as a zero or no or negative yards? Does it give?
Yeah, so they are. It looks like they are. This is not Football Outsiders. They are being denied by the defense at or behind the line of scrimmage.
Okay, so in other words, a zero or negative yards is what they're calling a stuff.
Right. So it could be, you know, it could be a wraparound draw on 3rd and 15, but it, you know, it could be all those, you know, 3rd and 2. If he gains a yard, it's not a stuff, which should be a. I mean, you know, there are different ways to do it, but that's how they do it.
Right. But I mean, that gives you a little bit of a picture anyway into what a successful play percentage is probably going to look like.
Here are the stuffs on the top, the leading rushers in the NFL. Ezekiel Elliott, 7.8. Jordan Howard, 8.3. DeMarco Murray, 11.3. Ajayi, 14.2. Le'Veon Bell, 5.0. Shady McCoy, 15.4. David Johnson, 9.9. LeGarrette Blount, 11.4.
Give me a running back that can make people miss in the backfield and doesn't have, you know, many unsuccessful first down plays. And just to clarify real quick before we get out of here on successful plays, and I think Football Outsiders even subscribes to this theory as well too. If it's first, a successful play on first down is one that gains 45% or more of the yardage needed for a new first down. So in other words, if it's 1st and 10 for a run or any play to be successful, that play needs to gain 4.5 yards or more on it.
Which in the playbook is going to be 2nd and 5 or less.
Right, exactly. He needs to gain 5 yards or more because they obviously don't use decimals there. For a second down play to be successful, it needs to gain 60% of the yards needed for a new first down. And then obviously for a play to be successful on 3rd or 4th down, you have to get 100% of the yardage needed. So I don't know. Should I go after Omar? You know, with a post and go with the successful play aspect of why and receiving yardage as to why Le'Veon Bell and J.I.J. aren't even close right now. But regardless, I think your statement there and that stat of stuffs will end up making the successful play percentage and differential probably even greater between the two guys, because if he's not getting, if he has that many stuffs, which are 0 yards or negative yards, how's he doing on plays that gain part, positive yardage? I bet there's a lot of 2 yard gains on first down and 10, right?
With
a Jaya and all. So, funny how, and you know, the thing too that you talked about, David, with explosive plays, funny how people try to move the goalposts. You know, I was always taught, and this goes way back to Brian Billick, who really was the first one that turned me on to the talk stat, that an explosive play is 20 yards, whether it's pass, run, whatever, because it's such a game. It's such a game-changing yardage factor, 20 yards or more. Now, yeah, I mean, are there going to be many running backs that gain 20 yards or more throughout the season? No. But, I mean, it still doesn't take away from the fact that 20 yards is 20 yards. And if you go and look at teams that gain 20 yards or more on a drive, regardless how they get them, that play, that drive, a lot of times is going to end up in 7 points more times than not, and more than anything, going to end up in three points or more. 10 yards or more on runs, you know, not so much. I mean, defenses can obviously recover from a 10-yard carry, in my opinion, easier than they can one that went 20 yards or more. But just make sure if you're looking at those kind of stats, listeners, that you know what the parameters are as far as what they're quantifying an explosive play and whether or not, you know, they're allowing a 10-yard run to qualify as such.
All right, just to wrap things up, Faneca and Hines Ward, Faneca finalist for the Hall of Fame. No surprise there. I think this is the year he gets in. You know, it's not my favorite topic. Hines Ward, not a finalist. I'm not surprised. I think Hines Ward is going to have a struggle to get in with the receivers coming down the pike. Any surprise for you?
No. I mean, Faneca, you know, if an interior lineman is going to probably get in this time or this go around, it's going to be him. And I think he's deserving. I like his chances. Hines Ward's going, you know, this log jam at wide receiver is going to make it tough on Hines Ward. And the question comes, can someone eventually, i.e. Ed Bouchette, sell the fact that Hines Ward was more than just a wide a pass-catching guy on the field? You know, he's going to have to sell that, the whole they created a rule to change, you know, that you know, because of the way Hines Ward played. Because a lot of what Hines Ward did that made him so great are things that there's not stats for. And, you know, there are some people in the Hall of Fame with stats comparable to Hines Ward, but is that argument going to be enough to get Hines Ward in? I think someone like Ed Bouchette, you know, if he's still around and still on the committee 3-4 years from now, is going to, and there's a kind of a lull in wide receivers, I think that's where Ed, you know, someone who's presenting him, you know, up for all that, is going to have to make that argument and get it across that Hines Ward was more than just a pass catching wide receiver.
I agree with that. It won't be Ed, because I don't think Hines Ward's going to be, I don't think he'll be in that situation do they vote it down to a certain number, or is it just all the finalists get presented? He could get presented the next 3 or 4 years, I guess. Yeah, I think it's going to be a tough road for Hines Ward.
How many is in this finalist?
15.
See, I mean, it might be a year or two before he makes it into that finalist, right?
Well, right, because, you know, we don't have Randy Moss yet. We don't have Torrey Holt yet. And then there's some other guys going to be coming down the wire as well. So, Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if he's a finalist in the next 5 years.
I think he might be able to get to be a finalist in the next 5 years. But it's going to be a tough road getting a bust, I think.
Yeah.
And I know that several people are going to listen to this and say you guys are crazy or whatnot. But, I mean, you look at his stats one way compared to some of the guys that are in there. Yes, but in the era that he played in, is, you know, what was it enough? And, you know, when you look at some of these guys and some of, you know, the Terrell Owens and the numbers that the Randy Moss and those kind of guys put up, is it enough? And I really think you have to take into consideration his blocking needs to be taken into. Put it to you this way. Is he deserving? Does he belong in the Hall of Fame?
You know, I've said this repeatedly, and I don't, you know, it's not really answering your question, but to me, Bettis and Hines Ward were guys who were right on the fence, and it's hard because the Hall of Fame is more of a statistical-based type of analysis, whereas I think those guys were, you know, locker room guys, character guys who, like you said, did things that don't always show up, and if you didn't live it, it's going to be hard to understand it and vote for it.
Yeah, and that's the battle. Look, we all watched Hines Ward. We know his value. We know what he did so well, you know. Stayed healthy, right? You know, stayed on the field, scored touchdowns, moved the chains when you needed them, you know, that kind of thing. But, I mean, was he the one? One thing I don't think I ever remember is how many explosive plays did Hines Ward produce during his career? I mean, I can find that up, find that out certainly real quick. But he wasn't a guy that you think of the 40-yard bomb, right?
No.
No,
he was 10 yards over the middle, get a first down.
Right. I mean, he was the move the chains kind of guy more than anything else there. And but I mean, he was a gritty player, and if you needed somebody to block for you out on the edge, he was your guy. I think he belongs in the Hall of Fame, David. I do, but I think you have to take in a lot of things into consideration, and I'm not so sure, you know, as we said, I'm not so sure how many outside of Pittsburgh are going to be able to do that without showing a lot of tape.
Right.
But Fanica, right. but Fanica, boy, just you sum his career out, up on that Willie Parker touchdown run against the Seahawks, right? I mean, that was all. I mean, that's Alan Fanica in a nutshell. You better get to our boy Craig Oxane. He's going to be mad at us.
Oh yeah, Craig. We have been a little light here as we have a little bit of a different format on our Wednesday. Steeler fans, mortgage rates are currently at or near all-time lows. And if you're looking to buy your first home, upgrade, downsize, invest, purchase a vacation home, or refinance, contact Craig Oxane from First Advantage Mortgage, a lifelong Steeler fan and Pittsburgh native. Craig's a nationally recognized lender that would love the opportunity to help out podcast listeners. You can call Craig Oxane today, 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. Email Craig at craig@blackandgoldlending.com or apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. Company NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender.
Rob, before we end, heck, we're already over it. It's not uncommon for me to flap my gums and get us over that one-hour mark by about 6 or 7 minutes. Chad Prince just sent me a tweet real quick, and I have not read or seen this study yet, but he says NFL.com did a study on quarterbacks throwing into tight windows. Ben Roethlisberger, lowest percentage. You're right. Like Sky's College Open. I haven't even read that article yet, but I know it's probably going to be on the money. That's not a knock on Ben Roethlisberger. It's just what makes Ben Ben. He don't like him no tight windows.
fair enough.
Folks, you can follow me on Twitter at Steeler's Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, TerriblePodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate to the show, please go to SteelersDepot.com and do so by hitting that donate button and going to PayPal. I'm sure we'll probably be talking about this study a little bit more on Friday. We're going to do our best to get a Dolphins beat writer for the Friday show. I guarantee it probably not going to be Omar Kelly either on top of, but we'll do our best to get somebody. David, thanks a lot. Different kind of format today, David. You know, not so much talking about what happened against Cleveland or what's going to happen against Miami, but ended up working out well.
All right. As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.